Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Focus on yourself and stop trying to scheme others. Cause once you get your wealth, then you can start to wake others. Stop running from yourself and take up your throne. Listen. Don't let them entities take up your home. Trippin'. Cause you're the entity that makes them stone cold demons. So I'ma hit them hard when they hit low. I'll be on your boulevard with my righteous flow. Yeah. I'll be pulling all these cards with this mighty flow. Never claim to be a thug. I just walk with love. Yeah. They just wanna give me the me mug because they nothing but someone that's not dealing with themselves, they probably need a hug. I'm the one that hit them with this truth, this we've been under rust. So deal with it yourself, don't hide behind the drugs. The nation is the nation's epidemic, this is not a gimmick. I'm just here to make the people feel it, orchestrate and kill it. Put it in its place and add some grace and we can re-reveal it.
This world is yours, it's yours for sure. So do it for yourself, you the day one, day one. So do it for yourself, you the day one, day one. Now it's time to activate and be the main one.
I'm back up on my grizzly, used to live in pity, throwing pity parties. Now I'm litty, I am my committee. Went from starved to living large, we live with no regard. So bring your light, cause you the star, they say we come from Mars. Either way it doesn't matter, cause you make it happen. You the author of your story, make or break it, captain. See right here, I'm building mansions on this track for rapping. Get the hell up out my house if you ain't about it, faker. A lot of fakers, man, it be a lot of takers. They just here to make me strong so I can elevate this. I'm just here to bring you something that'll last for ages. And you're just here to bring us something that'll last for ages. Now that's contagious, I can write 1,000 pages. But you gotta make the choice that'll rattle Satan. Until you pull up in a Royce to show us how to make it. Until you pull up with your voice to show us how to take it.
Take it.
Everybody, welcome, 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 welcome. This is your boy, Dr. Will Rogers, a.k.a. Master Teacher 33. And today is Saturday, Saturn's Day, Saturday, June the 23rd. Saturday, June the 23rd of 2018. And the time is 12 noon Central Time. As always, we have another outstanding show scheduled for you today. And as you know, I like to get right into the meat of the message. I know your time is valuable. I respect you and I respect your time. So I do not want to waste your time. I want to spend as much time revealing, explaining, illuminating, and simplifying the word of God, the word of Yahuwah and his son, Yahushua. So today, my brothers, today, my sisters, got a very, very powerful show scheduled for you today. You guys know I always have different people on the show from time to time. Today we want to do an interview with a beautiful sister that I don't know too much about, but met online by tuning into her YouTube channel named Sarah Willis. We want to go over something that I've suffered with. Talked about for everybody that know me and know the mental issues that I've overcame in my lifetime, which is a litany that's been officially diagnosed, and I had to go through a process of finding my way through are working my way through some of the mental dis-ease or mental issues that I had. And today we want to talk about some of those concerns, but we want to get a different perspective. Specifically today, we want to talk about borderline personality disorder. But we want to not only talk about that, but we just want to also have Sarah share with the listening audience or with my audience to, number one, just expose you guys to the fact that there is alternative methods or ways of dealing with specific issues. We're not saying that that you should not seek any, you know, outside professional clinical help, spiritual help, or what have you. But what really impressed me about this young lady was her 11 keys. So we really want to have her come online and share with you not only her personality, her testimony, but also personality as well, but also just share some of the keys that she's used to assist with overcoming some of the mental adversity that she has went through and has experienced. And again, this is going to be a powerful show today, so hopefully you guys are strapped in and ready to rock and roll. And with no further ado, well, let's introduce the speaker for today. Sarah, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Excellent. How are you doing this morning, sis?
Good. I'm really excited to speak with you. I'm really good. How are you doing?
I am outstanding, doing outstanding. Thank you so much. And this is really our first time speaking, listening audience, so I am getting to know her as you are as well. So Sarah, just let's start off. Let's just jump right in, and we'll get you an opportunity to share all your contact information and stuff before we finish the interview. But I really want to speak to the primary issue or the thing that really stands out when I listen to you and some of your information. If we can go back all the way to the beginning and kind of set the stage for the listening audience, tell us, number one, just tell us something about a little bit about yourself. Some of the stuff that you've shared with me as far as how did you get to where you are today? So start off with just telling us a little bit about yourself and then kind of move into, you know, how did you get to where you are today?
Okay. Well, I grew up in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and my childhood, I thought, was for the most part, pretty normal. But when I was in my teens and 20s and 30s, I just could not get over my depression. And I always used suicide as like a solution. So I've been suicidal for 21 years. And I was always in either counseling or therapy or psychotherapy or seeing a psychiatrist. I was always seeing people. I think the trouble with borderline is, like, therapy usually doesn't help this disorder. And I didn't even get the diagnosis until I was 33. They just thought I was bipolar. But, I just did a Google search one day when I was pretty much at rock bottom, just asking, like, what cures depression. And I came across ayahuasca. And I'd never heard of that. And I researched further. And almost right away I knew intuitively that that's what I was needing to heal. But anyway, I did a lot of research, and then a ceremony, two plant spirit medicine ceremonies presented themselves to me, and that was over 2 years ago, but it just totally changed my life, and now I'm dedicated in helping other people overcome this really horrible personality disorder that can destroy your life, so, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. So when we talk about, you know, your childhood, so what was it like growing up, especially for the most of my clients or stateside? I have, you know, a few clients that, you know, that are Canadians and, you know, other places and what have you. Mm-hmm. So can you give us a flavor or background, you know, what is it or what was it like growing up in British Columbia there in Canada? How was the weather? What was your childhood like as far as your interactions? And what's your religious background? How much and kind of like what – if any, was there, what kind of religious input did you have?
Okay. Vancouver and that whole area where I grew up is really beautiful, and most people are really happy and considerate and polite. And I was fairly happy, but I always knew that, I know, I always felt like I didn't belong, or I was kind of sad on and off, and I didn't, I grew up, my mother is a drug addict and an alcoholic, and I didn't know she had narcissistic personality disorder, but my parents got divorced, I lived with my dad, and we went to church every Sunday, and I went to Bible camp every summer as a kid. So even though I had, you know, not the best home life, I had a lot of friends and mentors around me that were walking with Jesus, that were with the Spirit. And I think that really laid the foundation for me coming back to that groundwork that I had when I was younger. So it was beautiful living in Canada, and I grew up Christian, in a Christian household. I wouldn't say I'm Christian anymore, but I'm sold out to Christ. I'm completely sold out to Christ, but I wouldn't say I'm a Christian. And or maybe I'm an esoteric Christian,
Absolutely. And my listeners are definitely aware, are tuned in to that as well, and definitely understand. And the reason why, and I wanted to get a little bit more of a foundation, if you will, because all of my listeners and for the listeners, especially the members of the life management team and life management system, this is really the first time, you know, so Sarah is kind of coming into this blind. She really doesn't know too much about me. I don't know too much about her. And I wanted it to be that way because, Sarah, one of the things that I do is I really assist my listeners and members in the counseling session is to get out of their comfort zone. And I can tell this is a little bit outside of your comfort zone, as it is with a lot of people who've never done, whether it's, speaking in public or like some of your YouTube videos, my YouTube videos. But the reason I wanted to interview you was the vibrational connection that I talk about with my group, which is really important. And the reason why there is a vibrational connection, because all my listeners know that, you know, other than arrested development disorder, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, personality or borderline personality disorder, I've been diagnosed with all of that stuff since I was a teenager. And my background was a little different, and I don't know how much of my stuff, Sarah, that you've listened to, but I was raised in a very, very oppressive, as I know now, you know, something similar to what we would call a MK Ultra type of, you know, cult or mind control using oppression. You mentioned something very interesting. What do you think now as an adult, what was the cause? I talk about in all my shows, oppression, depression, and finally possession. So what was the cause of your oppression or depression that kind of led up to some of the things that you're dealing with today?
So when you're around a toxic person or a narcissistic personality disordered person, it's highly contagious, and either you kind of start turning into a narcissist yourself, or you turn into a perpetual slave, depending on whether you have more masculine or feminine energy. And it sounds kind of crazy. It's a paradox because it's not exactly true, but in a way it's kind of like it's a parasite. The spirit goes into a child and stays with them, and either they have the spirit of rejection or they adopt the spirit of rejection and the spirit of rebellion. That would be narcissism. But anyway, I just have a spirit of rejection. So all my life I was operating from the spirit of rejection. And my reality reflected that spirit. So really the big key, in my opinion, in overcoming this is really to discern that spirit and to see the lies that it tells you. You know, it's a lie. Just like Satan, it's the father of lies.
Absolutely, sis. And so what was the cause of, so you had a spirit like me of rejection. You wanted to be a part, you wanted to be accepted, and you want it to be authentic. So what limited or what was the cause, if you will, of the rejection? Was it because you mentioned that there was, if I remember correctly, your parents got divorced. And so how old were you when your parents got divorced?
I was 6.
Wow. So at the age of 6, and then you went to live with your father, correct?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. And how much contact, if any, did you have with your mother? Did you see her on the weekends? And then if not your mother, what was the feminine input or the feminine energy, or was there any feminine input into your life after the divorce?
No, and that's something I'm really trying to have is a like a feminine or goddess influence in my life. I saw my mother every other weekend and parts of the summer and Christmas. And my father also remarried to another woman, both women in my life. Subconsciously, it felt like I was rejected. So, yeah, I think it's really important to have both masculine influences in your life and positive feminine influences in your life. So I've kind of adopted Mother Nature as being my adopted mother, kind of, sort of. But, yeah, I didn't have much feminine raising in that regard.
Absolutely.
But my dad is very, very in touch with his emotions.
Right, and your dad was pretty, would you say, was your dad overbearing, or was your dad pretty, how was your dad from a parenting perspective? You know, would you say his parenting skills, the way that he, you know, raised you, was that pretty normal, or was it lax or rather restrictive?
I'd say my father did above and beyond what most fathers do. He did above and beyond what any, he really was trying to be both parents in one person, which is impossible, but he did a great job. It's just that, and he was supportive of me, but he really was at a loss about what this was coming from, what to do to help me and how to address it. He wanted to be there, but he really didn't know how. Yeah, he just didn't know how to help me. But he was trying, but he couldn't. he still didn't know how to help me, and that's fine.
And so, because before we get into the really the meat of the message, which is this step by step process that you developed, that is the reason that I want to have you on the show, because it is really profound. It's the first system that I've seen that's similar to mine, that has some of the key components that have assisted me with my mental issues as far as processing and identifying the underlying spiritual cause of the mental disorder. So for you, you know, and again, as much as you would like or willing to share about, I attempted suicide, I think the first time when I rode my bike out in front of an 18-wheeler. I want to say I was about 13, 14 years old. What was it, or when did you have, could you speak on that, for example? And again, if you want to, as far as like any suicide attempts and how many and so on and so forth in that area.
I've had 2 suicide attempts, and one was very serious. I mean, both were very serious, but one I had to get my stomach pumped and stuff. But yeah, I've been totally having the suicidal ideation from the ages of 14 to 35. It wasn't until 35 that I broke through that thinking. So for 21 years, it was always in the background of my mind. Yeah.
Wow. And for all of the listeners, you know, for me, this is really personal, I guess, really close to home, only because of the some of the clients that I talk to and some of the people that I deal with a lot deal with this same issue, that due to, I think there is some, I know my mother at the time, I didn't notice this, but obviously as an adult it's a lot easier to identify, but there were certain genetic traits I think that was passed down. But then primarily there was a lot of environmental influences that really had a major impact on my childhood that did not, or that stifled or limited my psychological development. And then there was a lot of emotional and, in my case, physical and sexual abuse. So, Sarah, could you speak on that as well as far as before we get into some of the solutions that causes a lot of it? And the biggest thing that I want to drive home for all the listeners is the extreme especially in my case, and Sarah, you can speak to this as well, the ability, the extremes that I operate in, especially when I was in my emotional, I lacked emotional regulation. I didn't have the ability to manage my emotion, especially from this bipolar, schizophrenia, the rest of development. And then when you sprinkled in my case, you know, the BPD, where for me it was the ability to cut off. Like, I still suffer and I still wrestle with and I'm still managing that. But the one of the biggest problems that I had was when I felt wronged or disrespected by someone, the shifting of those feelings that led to the instability in my relationships, that also led to this self-injuring behavior that I was doing, that people who didn't really know me didn't know why I was quitting so many jobs, I was involved in so many adulterous affairs. It was really self. I was trying to hurt myself, but I didn't want to cut. I didn't want to do some of the other things. So, Sarah, could you speak on the emotional way by which this particular disposition causes self-injurious behavior, and how did it manifest in your life?
Yeah, it was kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'd always expect people to abandon me or use me, and they always did. It seemed like I kept on attracting a narcissist after narcissist. And, yeah, I had no identity. I really had no idea who I was. And, yeah, my emotions were completely dysregulated because I didn't know who I was. I really had no identity, and I was letting people tell me what my identity was through them. And it wasn't until I really had that connection, like I said, in my key number two, connection to your true self, that's when I still get sad and happy, obviously, but I don't experience the same roller coaster of emotions that I did. And I think that's all due to me knowing really who I am in Christ and what my purpose here on the earth is during this life. That
absolutely.
I just, yeah, you can't shake me now. You can't shake me now. Yeah, I'm unshakable. But I still have, you know, ups and downs. It's just not as bad as before.
Awesome. Wow. And that is so profound. So do you have any family members? I mean, as far as brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a brother who struggled with schizophrenia. Just a brother and a stepmother and a mother and a father. And they all live in Canada. I have aunts and uncles all over the U.S. as well, but my dad lives in Canada. But they're about 8 hours away, not too far. But I see them pretty often, or when I can.
Okay. And so how do you how were your relationships growing up? Especially because now you said you're in, if I remember correctly, you're in your mid-30s?
Yeah, well, I'm 37.
Okay, and so when we talk about, you know, relationships, you know, right now today, you know, are you married? Are you single? And if so, how is that relationship? How are your relationships today?
So it's kind of sounds crazy. I'm technically single, but I've recently met my twin flame. So I'm in a divine union with another soul, but, that other person has narcissistic tendencies as well. But so I'm single, but I do feel unified with another soul for all eternity. But it was there, that divine marriage was there to really teach me what I was still not seeing about myself.
Right.
But yeah, I'm currently single. I'm not in any romantic relationship at all.
And that's really profound, because when you talk about, especially the narcissistic, you know, why do you think that there is this draw or this attraction? You know, one of the keys that you have when we, you know, as we get ready to talking about these 11 keys that you have, one of the things that really stands out, you know, you talk about, you know, one of the first keys is, you know, removing toxicity, or, you know, not only in your own life, but also and other people are limiting the influence or the impact, or what I call and what I tell all my clients is you know, whatever you react to, you enact to. So we bring into or we draw into our lives, you know, people that are a vibrational equivalent. And so as someone who is on this and reestablishing and working through your own thing, what is the draw with narcissists? Why do you feel like they're, you've had a lot of relationships with people with this narcissistic personality?
So it's like it attracts like. So it's basically two individuals that have the exact same wound, except that they're expressing them totally different. One's perpetually giving their power away and the other one's taking. So, yeah, the reason I've been drawn to with narcissists is because I'm a total match for that. And that's what I've been still working on to get out of. And I thought I had broken out of that cycle, but with my twin flame, with my divine masculine counterpart, I realized that I was still not getting it. But that's why it's called, also been known by the author Ross Rosenberg as the human magnet syndrome. And it's a very real magnetic dance that we do with these dysfunctional relationships. They just happen. The narcissist senses the empathy that they lack, and the codependent wants the narcissist to be healed or to be changed or to actually love them, and it always ends up in disaster. So, but my loving key system, the number one key, in my humble opinion, is the most important. You could really just take it down to just that one key. The other keys are super important and very helpful, but really that's the number one, is discerning with ego or the Jezebel spirit. It's known by tons of different names, but it's essentially toxic ego. It's not really the opposite of anything. It's just a lack of care and empathy and love. So, yeah.
Absolutely, sis.
Basically, yeah.
And so when we talk about that, especially the Jezebel spirit, and we see that, that's especially for, a lot of my clients coming out of traditional Christianity, where there is this Christianese that everybody speaks, that it's the same thing that's inside of, modern psychology, but just different terminology, and the same thing with biology. And in my studies and what I do, I've just married or I just affect etymology to get people to see that, most Christians are Satanists or Luciferians, and they just are not aware of it because of the lack of the ability to identify the terms. And as I found out with my studies and all, that really breaks my heart was when I really found out by delving into and looking at it for myself that I had all of these attributes and characteristics that make up this borderline personality disorder, and then really looking into narcissistic behavior and psychopathic behavior, and having to come to the terms with identifying the fact that, this is me, but it's not the true me, and which leads me to your second step, which is what I really focus on, and is the foundation of my ministry and my business and everything I do, which is, I think, my mentor, Dr. Miles Monroe, talked about where purpose is not known, abuse is inevitable, the inability to connect with the true self, the ability to truly weed past all of this narcissistic or social or psychopathic behavior and actually attaching to the life path behavior. But when we talk about, and you mentioned something that I think is extremely, extremely important. There is a pattern. It is an abnormal behavioral pattern that is a lack of empathy. Can you really, can you speak on that? Like, how does that manifest? What, in your opinion, what did you think was the cause of your disconnection or your lack of empathy, if you will?
I didn't have lack of empathy. I had lack of empathy for myself, but I didn't lack empathy for anybody else. I had empathy for days, for years, but never for myself. It's kind of like the narcissist sees himself everybody, but the codependent or borderline or whatever you want to call it, the self-love deficit, sees other people never sees themselves. So that's what I was saying. It's the exact same wound, except for it's expressing itself in polar opposite ways. So yeah, I had empathy just never for myself, and that's what I'm trying to learn now is really, I have to start seeing myself and having empathy for myself first before anybody else, because love with the self is foundational before you can really give to another.
Absolutely, and that's, the touchstone of the thing that I came to the realization of was this weaponized caring that I talk about with my clients. And what I was referring to is this ability, because being raised in a traditional church, I was taught or told, to deny thyself, pick up my cross, and follow Christ. And I thought that meant to be a doormat. I watched my mother do what I call doormat personality, or doormat, meaning that, me and my brothers and sisters was raised in an environment where, I saw things that my mother did that was very, very loving and kind and giving, but it was always at the expense of the self. It was almost as if, and again, this is just my perspective. I know my brothers and sisters may have a different perspective, but for me, I wanted my mom to stand up against the abuser, at least from my perspective. And I never saw that happen. And so I grew up thinking that that was love. And I didn't understand that all of my relationships, I've been basically a doormat, meaning that I didn't see the fact that I was being used. And people, I remember my first marriage, I remember my sisters telling me that, I don't know, bro, they really can't, family, they just love you. And so they really don't really come at you with a lot of, at least especially in my family, my brothers and sisters and I are really, really close. All my life says this is what all, and the point I'm trying to make is this disposition, this demon almost cost me my life. Because if you care for other people more than you care for yourself, the lack of self-preservation, I mean, I'm not talking about this egotistical, arrogant, worldly, selfish stuff. I'm talking about a total lack of seeing worth and value in the self. I didn't see no worth. I could see worth and value in other people, but I could not see worth and value in myself, which is why I always gave away my products and services, which is why I still struggle with the ability, what I call the power of saying no. When you say no to someone else, you have to say yes to yourself. Yeah, but I feel guilty. I still struggle with that. So how were you able to deal with and kind of reconnect with this, making it okay to love yourself and say yes to yourself instead of no to yourself by saying yes to someone else?
That's a very interesting story how that happened. And that was through my twin flame experience. For the first time in my life, I was able, I kind of put my consciousness in his, and I looked at myself through him, and I was able to see myself objectively, and I was able to see, whoa, I'm beautiful and intelligent and creative and so talented. Like, it was only then that I was really able to see that I had so much going for me and so much to offer the world around me. And that's really when I began to heal, is when I really saw myself through this man's eyes. They say that twin flames is like your perfect mirror, and just meeting him, I was able to see myself. And not just the good stuff, I could see more of the bad stuff too, or the black as well, or see my dysfunction. But the big part, I've had a false twin flame experience, and that was allowed me to discern the spirit, and then meeting my true twin flame was allowed me to see my own worth and divinity.
Absolutely. Absolutely, sis. And another reason why I wanted to have you on the show to interview, because, again, most of my listeners and members are coming out of a very, very staunch traditional Christian perspective, and they lack the ability to understand the new age, or what I call the new age, or some of the esoteric verbiage and terminology that it's just, it's the same thing, but it's just called a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It's spoken about in a different language, if you will. It's almost speaking a different language. It's like speaking English and Spanish, but you know the words have the same meaning. So, mm-hmm. can you give us a working definition from your perspective? What exactly is borderline personality disorder? Because it is different from bipolar disorder. I mean, it's definitely mm-hmm. different from schizophrenia or arrested development disorder. So what is a border? What is this, you know, borderline personality disorder?
What it means to me is someone who is not attached to their true self, and that lack of attachment distorts their reality. So they see reality a certain way. They see themselves kind of like a victim or someone that no one would really like, so they have to be a people pleaser. It's so borderline and narcissistic personality disorder. They're both people who are operating from the false self or the toxic ego, but just expressing itself differently. It's basically like narcissistic personality disorder is the parasite, and the borderline is the host of that parasite. The borderline just has to see their true self and their true worth. But most times, the human brain is like a software or a computer. And so if that computer system has been damaged from their upbringing, it's really hard to come out, to see yourself as you really are and not with the lies the narcissist told you you were.
Absolutely, sis. And so how did you come to this understanding? For example, you mentioned that you've been through, so if it's okay with you sharing with the listening audience, how much professional, quote-unquote, clinical therapy have you been through, for example? How many sofas have you laid on? How many people have you talked to about this before coming to your understanding?
Oh, my goodness. So many. I've been in therapy since I was 16. 16 till 35. I've done dialectical behavior therapy. I've done EMDR. I've done hypnotherapy. I've done group sessions, and I've just done it all. I've been seeing, and that's, yeah, and I had very little help with that, or very little healing occurred. There was some healing, but not really. I was still, angry and suicidal, and it wasn't until the plant spirit medicine ceremony that I started to heal.
Wow. So in and out of different therapeutic environments since the age of 16. So that's mm-hmm. been about 15 years or so of mm-hmm. different types of clinical, things where people have been assisting or trying to come to what I deal with, it, which is what I call the root cause or the negative habit pattern or the core imprint, that which is a lack of identity to the self, the true self.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that, I want to talk about, when we look at the symptoms or we look at some of the things, some of the behavioral patterns, and what I talk about with my clients is recognizing the psychosis, recognizing the patterns that we have in our life. One of the things that I had to deal with was recognizing not only the lack of empathy that I had for myself. I had plenty for other people, but I didn't have it for myself, and why that was, and then my self-defeating, self-sabotaging behavior. My psychosis manifests in normal. In other words, when everything is going, when I have money and relationship is going good, I'm in good health, and everything is going normal, that's when the ruling disposition pops up, if you will, in my life to try to disrupt, mm-hmm. if you will, and cause me to make impulsive decisions. My actions become very impulsive. I create problems in my relationships that doesn't exist. I go through this whole episode of creating, it just pops up out of nowhere. I just get angry for no reason. I just wake up and I'm angry. And I just wake up and I'm depressed. I have anxiety. I have all of these other, borderline personality, mood swings. And there is no, apparently on the surface, the loved ones or the people that really don't know me don't really understand, hey, how in the hell did he change his interest and his moods so quickly? Today I was his best friend. now he doesn't like, you know, and I, you know, he doesn't want to talk to me. So for me, I had to identify how this ruling disposition, this personality trait, was it manifesting in my life, so that way I could remove it. Because the way the enemy works is he doesn't like to be seen. He doesn't want you to know. And so the ability, what for me, could you tell the audience the 11 keys that you have came up with, and then I want to kind of go through each one of them, time permitting, each one of the keys, because the reason I wanted to have you on the show was because a lot of the 11 keys that you have, although some of them are, you know, are different or what have you than some of the stuff that I talk about and think about in my spiritual therapeutics practice, but I really want the listening audience to listen to these 11 keys that Sarah has, because these keys are very important to overcoming the patterns that limit our true connection with ourselves. So, Sarah, could you list those 11 keys that you have?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. So key number one, like I was saying earlier, it's, in my opinion, it's the most important and critical one of all the keys, is remove toxicity. And basically what that means is being able to discern the Jezebel spirit, or discern Watego, whatever you want to call it. You want to call it the spaghetti monster. It's basically being able to discern the devil or Satan, or, you know, the one that causes chaos and fear and rejection and rebellion. To see, you have to notice it in yourself when that, you know, at any time there's either that ego, which is the flesh spirit, which is your truest self, or toxic ego, you know, like the cartoons with the devil and the angel. So my first key is discerning the devil within yourself and discerning the devil with other people. And if you discern the spirit with other people, you have to remove those toxic people. And I've come to the point, yeah, I've lost a lot of friends along the way, but I've gained so much peace from their absence and so much healing and growth. So number one, remove toxicity. And number two is connection to your true self. That's when you see through all the lies and you see who you really are, what your purpose is, what you really came here to do, and start doing it. And key number three is just being aware that everybody has, whether you're a man or woman, we all possess masculine and feminine energies. And the feminine has kind of been erased from our society. So every morning I do my ritual. And every week I do my routine. That's my, I'm on key number four, which is the ritual and routine. That's when we start using our natural innate energies for our benefit. And I say that my feminine energy routine is kind of like a mood stabilizer, and the masculine routine is like an antidepressant. And then key number 5 through 8 is Toltec wisdom, and that's from the Four Agreements, and that's always being impeccable with your word. Our words are so important and create our reality. Never assume anything that anybody does. It's because of them, not because of what you're doing. It's because of them. So don't take anything personally, and never assume. I hope it all. Right. And then key number 9 is spirit, and that's when you ask, invoke spirit. And I'm about to film that video next. That's when we invoke spirit and use intuition and live our lives by spirit. And let spirit love us and teach us and guide us and show us what we're missing by communing with that spirit and allowing spirit to guide us. And then key number 10 is cultivate self-love. So I'm going to talk about why it's so important to love yourself and what it creates. It creates dominion within yourself. It creates control and boundaries within yourself just by loving yourself. So many good things take place when we love ourselves. And key number 11, which is my master key, which kind of unlocks, say, you're struggling or you don't even know where to begin, is plant spirit medicine. And there's no way I could have done the other keys without the plant spirit medicine. The plants were totally, in my opinion, the way we address mental illness is completely false and destructive and invalidating. And when we take the plants, it's like having our own priest and doctor and psychologist in our own body. And it allows the neural pathways in our brain from PTSD to become unlocked. So through a plant spirit medicine ceremony, you could do like 20 years of therapy in one night. And it's so healing, so magical, and you get in touch with the divine. because nature is the garment of the Almighty. When you tap into nature, you tap into God. Yeah, those are my 11 keys.
Wow, that is profound, because at each one of these keys, you know, the fact that you've been able to, you know, unravel or undress the true nature by which, or to be able to discern the true nature by which the enemy is a god. For me, he is a linguistical god. He's a god of the ability to hide behind letters, or hide behind systems, or levels, or patterns, or routines, or habits, and the ability to trace it back to its source, to find it. That's why I like etymology, and I consider myself an etymologist, because of the ability to trace things back, you know, to its original source. Because
yeah,
you can take it out at the root.
Yeah.
Exactly, or the cause. And so now that you've listed these 11, let's go through them just on a little deeper level, if you can, especially the first two, because that's kind of the foundation of what I do. Number one, to be able to discern the cause or the devil or the enemy within the self first, then others.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you think it's so important? A lot of people like to, you know, like in, you know, the black culture, it's always the white man. You know, the white man holding us down. Mm-hmm. The white man is limiting our ability to be. So why do you think it's important to address the self first before we address anyone else?
With Tego or Jezebel, it's like it acts in fractals. It doesn't just it occurs within the self, within relationship dynamics, and on a global scale. When you discern the spirit, you can see it in yourself and in others, and like I said, on a mass quantity, in a society at large. The devil is within us. It's within every person. But I would say that the devil operates slightly different with the narcissist versus the borderline. It's mainly, like I was saying, it's the borderline devil is basically just the spirit of rejection, whereas the Jezebel, the Tego devil, or the narcissist, it's the spirit of rejection compounded with the spirit of rebellion as well.
So,
I think it's foolish to believe that the devil is, you know, not outside of our, it's within every human being.
Exactly. And the scripture talks about, you know, that in the book of Romans, and it talks about how we, the flesh wars against the spirit wars against the flesh. So it's another way of saying pretty much the same thing, which is what I try to express to all my listeners, the importance of understanding and the struggle I have with traditional believers or Cretans, as I call them, or Christians, is that the inability to connect the terminology. It's the freaking same thing, just a different term, a different label.
Mm-hmm.
A different package.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he's sitting here, it's the same devil. He just got on a different suit.
Yeah. It's known by archons or Congeletta. In every culture, in every, even every movie, like Agent Smith is in The Matrix. That's Watigo or Jezebel. It has many, many different names. The devil has many different names. And the world wants you to believe that the devil doesn't exist, but that's not true. It does. Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's really the absence of care. It's the absence of love. And when a human being doesn't have love, the human personality naturally just contorts into this, like I said, the spirit of rejection, or the spirit of rejection and rebellion.
Well, I always talk about the pothole thing, and I say, you know, a pothole is not a thing, it's not a substance, you know, it's not a noun.
Right.
A pothole is the absence of a thing. It's the absence of dirt. If you feel dirt back in it, there is no pothole. The pothole only exists if you remove the dirt. As long as there's dirt in there, there is no pothole. And so that's the analogy that I try to use all the time, is that the ability to discern the absence of dirt is number one, because the way, and you have that in your system as well, the ability to discern within yourself if there is a if the self is devoid of some of the what the scriptures call the fruit of the spirit, love, joy, peace, gentleness, meekness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. If the self is devoid of those attributes, it leads to certain other, you know, behavioral dysfunction and disorder.
Yeah. Yeah, very predictable. And it almost always contorts the same way, exactly. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, that's powerful. So let's go deeper into number two. I really like this one. Number two, part of the thing I do is I do a 700-page Dear Kinnear report, basically just a personality profile for each one of my clients. And one of the things that stand out is the inability to connect with their true, authentic self. It took me 50-plus mm-hmm. years to find my purpose because of mm-hmm. the number of different personalities, demons, if you will, mm-hmm. that I was addressing mm-hmm. that was hiding the true self, the inability mm-hmm. to connect. I always connected, but it was always with a false ego. It was always with a false version of myself that was presenting itself as the real self. So how have mm-hmm. you been able to connect? Because, again, you're not one of my clients. We've never met. This is our first conversation over the phone. So I'm hearing from you, just like my listeners. So I really don't know too much about you, and you really don't know too much about me. That's why I wanted to do the interview. But I wanted to show not only my clients and listeners is the ability to connect vibrationally. I know you, but I don't know you. The reason that I know you is we have like adversities, I guess we can put it that way, mm-hmm. that we've overcome mm-hmm. through mm-hmm. understanding and tapping into and reconnecting with what some people call source. You can call God, slice it and dice it, however you want to slice it and dice it. But I'm not here to argue and debate over non-issues. I'm here to really focus on solutions. How do I pay my light bill? Mm-hmm. How do I be a better husband? How do I be a better father? How do I be a better brother to my sisters and a better brother to my brother? Those are more important, I think, than arguing over some of the stuff that the traditional church likes to debate. So how do
mm-hmm.
you
– I tell you.
How did you see yourself, and how did you see your purpose?
many ways. after my ayahuasca ceremony, I don't really know how it happened, but I was finally able to have the courage to really be who I wanted to be and say what I wanted to say and do what I needed to do.
Mm.
Whereas before,
wow.
I was always looking for external validation through others, the things outside
yes.
myself. But that was a moment where I was like, I don't care if it makes someone mad. I don't care if it disappoints someone, or I don't care what the consequences is. I'm going to do what I need in life and what I want to do in life. And, I'm going to make myself happy first. And then the other way I was connected to my true self is, like I was saying, I could see myself through my divine masculine counterpart, Twin Flame. I could see, I was able to see I was able to see myself objectively, and I could see, I had a purpose in my life, and I had a very specific mission to offer the world, and my life had much needed purpose. So I think those two events combined really propelled me into my mission work that I'm doing today.
Wow, profound. That's very, very important, that ability to, say yes to yourself, which is what I've stumbled across. My younger sister, Linda, really helped me with that. And, with the last, episode, for lack of a better term, that I had, one of the things that she said to me was, bro, you have the right to be happy. And I just cried. Mm-hmm. And she just said it again. Mm-hmm. You have the right to, it's mm-hmm. okay. For mm-hmm. something in my brain did not make it okay for me. Now, it was okay for other people. I spent my life making mm-hmm. other people happy. But when it came for me, I still struggle. I'm a lot better than where I used to be. But there is that little voice in the back of my head that say, Negro, it's not your turn. You don't have the right to be happy. You don't deserve mm-hmm. happiness. And, mm-hmm. I watch my sisters, both of my sisters I have mad respect for, because they are, very successful in their, occupations. They have this sense of, because we came from the same place. So I knew the demons or the issues that they had to battle to get to the place where, you can buy your own home, you can, you can drive your own car. It's great to have somebody, but you don't need to have somebody to give you permission to be you.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get past the need for somebody to come alongside of you and say, Sarah, it's okay for you to go, you know, and play music? You just, you're on YouTube, you got your guitar out, you singing, you ain't asked nobody permission. How the hell did you do that? How can you... I mean, you didn't go to school and get no certificate and no, you know, to say, okay, here's Sarah, she can play the guitar, y'all listen to her. You just on there playing and singing and doing your thing. So how did you give yourself permission to be you?
I knew that following my bliss was part of my mission, and I knew that once I, you know, owned my true self, that it would allow other people to own their true selves. So I guess that really motivated me, that I knew if I shone the light, other people would claim their own light. It was really an act of courage, really. It was really a moment where I'm just going to live for myself. And I understood after the plant spirit medicine ceremonies that, you know, to live a holy, authentic life, you're gonna piss off some people, and you just have to be okay with that. Whereas before, I was not okay with that. Before, I was a perpetual people pleaser, and I always had. If anybody was disappointed in me, I couldn't allow that to happen. Whereas now it's like, fine, you know, be disappointed in me or be mad at me, it doesn't matter. But that was really hard for me for most of my life. Yeah.
Wow, that is profound. And you mentioning, and you know, the plant ceremony, and you talk about that. I know I have a few clients that have done a lot of stuff in, man, different modalities of, you know, psychedelics and what have you. And I know I'm a fan of and learned a lot from, you know, Terrence McLennan, I think his name is, and some
McKenna,
of the other stuff.
Yeah.
So, and so how did you, because I take it a step further, then not only just stopping at the plant ceremony, but then I look into, okay, who is the founder, creator, and power? Where does the plant get its energies from? Then I look at the sun, and then I think, okay, well, who created the sun? What is the sun about? So when you mention the plant ceremony, and you mention, which is really number 3 and number 4, we talk about rituals, routine. Can you break down for the listening audience what happened? What did you experience? Because I've heard positive. I can't speak from that because I have no personal experience. But I know I have a few clients. I have one client in particular who had, did a lot of different psychedelic, you know, animascaria, you know, magic mushrooms, a lot of different stuff. So for you, was that just kind of one ceremony? Was there multiple ceremonies that kind of led to a unfolding of, you know, purpose and things that would assist you?
Yeah, that's it's interesting, because I mentioned that we have our feminine and masculine energies. Every human has these qualities or these energies. And the plant spirit medicine ceremonies that I attended were both a masculine ceremony and a feminine ceremony. And what that means is the masculine, it's known as the grandfather plant, and that's San Pedro.
Right.
It's also known as Wachuma by indigenous cultures. It's a cactus. It's San Pedro. It's also St. Peter, who holds the keys to heaven. And it's a very grandfather or masculine presence where it's not random at all. It's very steady. I experienced this profound love that I've never experienced. I felt almost like the Creator himself was just wrapping me up and loving me. And I didn't hear these actual words, but I just was getting the feeling in my spirit that I've been blocking myself from love for all my life, and I need to start letting it in. And to let that in, it said, first you have to, like, accept your own love. Like, don't block your own love. And then eventually other love will come in, but it's got to come from you first. It was basically like, you know, stop blocking yourself, let the love in. And then the ayahuasca, which is known as the grandmother plant or grandmother ayahuasca, that was a little bit different. That was a little bit more intense and random and hard to explain. But that's when I met my twin flame, and I experienced hero schemas with him. And from that relationship or union with that man, I was able to see myself more objectively. But both of these plant medicines are extremely, extremely effective at treating PTSD, complex PTSD, depression, anxiety, addiction. Science really doesn't understand how exactly it works, but basically it unlocks the neural pathways in the brain. And it's kind of like magic, honestly. It's really like you are interacting with the divine. And during ayahuasca, I actually heard some of the Holy Spirit actually speaking to me in actual words. So, yeah, it was really profound. And I think that's what we're missing is we're lacking a connection not only with our true selves, but we're lacking a connection with nature. And like I mentioned earlier, that connection with nature is the Almighty. That's God. So.
Absolutely. And was there, because, you know, there is this, like for me, when I talk with some of my clients who have, I have quite a few that have done, this type of work underneath the direction of some either a shaman or someone who has some, experience in psychedelic drugs or psychedelic plants and plant-based, hallucinogenics and what have you, and to be able to assist or to guide, if you will, them through this particular event. My concern has always been the deities that are encountered. How do you know they are benevolent? How do you know that is something that is taking you in a direction of what I call the omnibenevolent, the big G, all good, or your highest good? What is, how were you able to trust? I'm going to put it that way, because for me, it has always been, I know when I was in New Mexico and up in Santa Fe, I had an opportunity to go and do some DMT, and the guy, the ceremony and what have you, there was this sense of, oh, man, I'm going to be in a, which is why I don't drink. It's like when I tell my kids all the time, because they drink to the point where, not all, but sometimes where they get inebriated and they don't remember how they got home the next day. And to me, you're putting yourself in a place where you're at a disadvantage. So were you in an environment with a person that was able to assist you with that, somebody that you trusted, or how did that ceremony, who administered it, and how did that go? How were you able to put aside some of the spiritual concerns in order to, go through that particular ceremony?
You really have to trust, and it's really kind of like an ego death. You have to trust, and I did encounter an entity that was not benevolent at all, and I trusted my gut intuition that this, I think it was the top hat, the shadow being, or a jester or a joker spirit. Yeah, I just avoided the joker spirit, but it was. But
did
there
you
was
say top hat?
A lot of, yeah, a top hat, a shadow demon being, or I don't really know how to, what it, I think some people say it as, maybe it was a machine elf. I don't know. It was a jokester spirit or a not of the light. Yeah, but when you know your power, when you know the truth, which is infinite love, is all that there is. Anything else is an illusion. It was scary, but it didn't really affect me. But it was scary. It was kind of creepy, but I didn't focus on it too much, and it went away. But yeah, my ayahuasca ceremony was definitely not all love and light. It was at times very creepy. I entered a hell realm at one point, and it wasn't pleasant. But it wasn't at all as hard as being a borderline personality disorder. I had nothing. It was not as hard as that. So.
Yeah. Wow. Very, very. Thank you so much for sharing that, because that's always tough to talk about. I know with some of I've talked to a lot of clients who, and people just in general who've done through and went through it, and some of it obviously was very, very therapeutic, very helpful. And then there's been a lot of incidents where, and usually with some of the clients that I've talked with, either something maybe was done incorrectly or what have you. But it's very interesting that you talk about, that was one of the issues that, I talk about two things from my childhood. That was the Minotaur and that was the Top Hat. Those, when I was a kid, those entities always been, since I can remember, 6, 7, 8 years old, we had a place when we was kids called Dead Man's Curve. Me and my brothers and sisters, we never wanted to be around that curve or in that area at dark. And I used to always see and been visited in dreams and visions and nightmares of this tall, I used to call it Abraham Lincoln because it was a tall.
Oh, wow. Right.
So that brought back some memories when you said that. So that's really interesting.
I believe it's an entity that exists in the collective unconsciousness, which is another word of saying spirit world. There's you know, the Christ spirit, the top hat demon.
Right.
There's lots of Grim Reaper. There's lots of entities that are basically just archetypes that exist, or the Jester. A lot of people see the Jester on DMT. Yeah, it's just an archetype that exists in the collective unconscious.
Wow. Wow, that's profound. So we're just about out of time. I want to kind of get through, man. So number five, that's another one. And we'll I guess we can wrap it up with number five. I want to try to get through all of them. So I may have to have you back on. We can go through the others.
Oh,
others, but
yeah, I love that.
Number five was a big one for me. Is a big one for me, because I look at, you know, I mean, the way that you title it or label it, because it's called impeccability of word,
mm-hmm.
with your word. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned the four agreements, and you know, I talk about, you know, the truth versus a truth, which breaks down to the true, impeccable, or original meaning of a word. So what does number five mean to you, impeccability with your word?
Oh, man, I could talk about that for a long time. I guess to summarize, but it's so deep, we could talk about this for at least an hour or two, and just being impeccable with your word. But words contain so much power, and when we understand the true meaning of words and how we use the words, basically you create your own reality with the words you speak. And to sum it up, I guess, if you say you're going to do something, do it. If you say you're going to be there, be there. Always speak in truth and in love of other people, including yourself. If you have a bad thought, don't even give power to it by speaking it. Because when you're speaking it, you're basically starting the beginning stages of manifestation. So it's really, really, really important to be impeccable with your words. Yes, our words have the potential to create a new reality around us. So watch the words you speak, and try to only speak, you know, positive, loving words, because it will create your reality.
Wow.
Your subconscious picks up on it.
Yeah. When you have a bad thought, and I've been saying this for years, man. I can't. You're the first person that I've heard say this. I've talked to a lot of therapists and a lot of gurus and Reverend Dr. Bishops and all this other bullshit, and it's, you know, not even, you said don't even speak it, because you're giving it life.
Don't, no. Yeah, you give it power. You're giving it power. You're feeding it. Yeah, don't say it. Yeah, very important.
Wow. So
exactly,
man. And I've been saying that for years, and I know that has been one of the biggest keys to my development is, you know, people tell me, some of the naysayers, especially, well, I'm not going to say that, but, you know, how do you, like, live in the real world without talking about real disaster, so to speak, meaning that I don't even acknowledge fear, doubt, and unbelief. I don't even acknowledge it. I don't give it the time. It's not worth my time. If I got a bad thought, I don't even speak it. I don't even address it. I just ignore it. Bad behavior, I don't have time anymore. And there is this, you know, and rightfully so, some people say, well, hey, that's not living in reality, because you're not addressing, you know, it. So what would you say to someone who said that is like, because like me, I don't give negativity place in my world anymore. Negative, toxic people, negative people, people that like to acknowledge, you know, they want to play. I call it, you know, playing with the devil. I used to do that too, but I don't have time anymore to play with the devil, you know. So what do you say to people who say that? Well, you need to speak the negative, and you know, and I understand, like, for a lot of stuff we're talking about, because it's in a what I call a teaching environment, which is a lot of time. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about, you know, some of the negative things that happened in your childhood and so on and so forth and how you got there. But it's always done for me in a therapeutic environment. It's always done as a teaching tool or whatever. But if I'm at home and I got a feeling, like this morning, I had a feeling like, yeah, I didn't want to go work out. I feel kind of tired, blah, blah, blah. I didn't acknowledge that feeling. I put on my shorts. I went to the gym and I worked out. So should we be more coddling, if you will, towards negativity?
No, this is where it gets kind of tricky. So I hope I really articulate my point here. But listen very, very closely. So when we ignore, we look at the word ignorance, it's basically ignorance. So when we don't confront the darkness or the evil, when we leave evil unchecked, that's when it grows. So to be impeccable with your word means speaking in truth. And there are real evil things. That's the truth. That's the world we live in. But there's a big difference between dispelling the darkness by being aware of it and speaking that that's what's happening, and then feeding it. Do you see the difference? Feeding it, focusing on it, dwelling in it, giving it time and energy and your agony and misery. There's a big difference between, and like I said in my key number one, I break it down to awareness, acknowledgement, compassion, and creativity. That goes with the first one, or I guess the first two, which is you have to be aware. It's okay to speak the truth that, it's good or healthy for me to acknowledge that I was narcissistically abused. If I ignored it, it would grow and grow and grow. So there's a big difference between being aware of something and then just feeding into it.
Mm.
So you have to see it and speak the truth, but you can't feed the negativity. That's why you have to have the creative spirit and create something different. Have compassion and then be the creative spirit and create. You have to create.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Wow, profound, profound, profound. Thank you so much, sis. Wow, man, Sarah, thank you very, very much for agreeing to come on the show, especially with having no pre, usually I try to sit down and, get to know somebody and, before bringing them on the show and so on and so forth. But I just thank you so much for being willing to come on the show, and I definitely want to have you back in a couple of weeks or so. Thank you so much. I want to finish up going through those the rest of those 11 keys, because I think they're very important to a lot of the work that I'm doing and a lot of stuff that I do, especially for the members of my life management team, because it's good for them to hear from someone else that's really not affiliated with me, but that has come to the same spiritual conclusion that I have come to when it comes to dealing with these non-benevolent personalities, modern-day mentality or modern-day mentalism is yesterday's demonism for me, which is the ability to understand how, certain personality traits are demonized, if you will, from a traditional Christian perspective. And understanding how do we address these internally. Prayer is great, don't get me wrong, and all that good stuff it does, but there is some things that we need to do. The scripture says faith without works is dead. So there is certain things that we can do to assist prayer and medication. And that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. That's what I've done. And that's what I found worked for me. I just can't, just sit on the sideline and just fold my hands and just let the enemy run ratshack through my mind through my life.
We have to check you.
Exactly. So, sis, in closing, could you share your contact information with the listening audience if someone wants to get in contact with you to talk more about your system and what have you? How can we get in contact with you? Do you have a website or anything that you would like to share with the listening audience?
I have a YouTube channel that's called Illuminated Nurturer 33/6. That's my life's path. And then my email, if you want to email me, I would be delighted to email with you, is willissarah10@yahoo, and that's spelled willissarah10@yahoo.com, and I'd love to hear from you.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah. Thank you very, very much. I definitely appreciate that. On our next, I get with your email you to talk about when we can have you back on the show, because I really want to talk a little bit more about the two things that a lot of people may not know about, and that is, San Pedro and ayahuasca, and kind of break that down just a little bit more to get people to understand the the positives and the negatives, if you will, because there's always things to consider when you're doing anything along those lines. To talk about that a little bit more, and then also to have you back to finish up the rest of the 11 keys. So, again, thank you so much for coming on today's show. Everybody that's tuning in, Thank you guys that's listening live and the people that will be listening to this later on you know, YouTube and Spreaker, anymeeting.com, Tube Mogul. So I spread my stuff around everywhere, Sarah. So you should be getting a lot of emails.
Thank you so much for having me.
Was a pleasure. Thank you again. Absolutely. So I would do it. Listening audience, we'll definitely have her back so that way we can finish up the conversation. Now, next Saturday, I'll be talking with Brother Hervey, talking about, he's from Haiti, one of my clients that has dealt with a lot of the black magic and witchcraft and coming out of that from a Haitian perspective. And he's dealt with some serious dark entities, if you will, being a Haitian. So we'll have him on next Saturday. Then after that, we'll hopefully try to have Sarah back on. So thank you guys so much for listening today. Again, everybody, this is Dr. Will Rogers, a.k.a. Master Teacher 33. God bless you. His name is Yahuwah. That's what they, some of us call him. Son's name is Yahushua. May the Ruach, the set of part one, continue to lead you and guide you into all truth, because it will never, ever, ever manipulate or control you. And as always, my brothers, as always, my sisters, I will, make no doubt about it, I will see you in eternity. God bless you.
I'm gon' do this even after death. I'm gon' do this even after death. You can't match my death. I'm gon' do this even after death. I'm gon' do this even after death. You can't match my death. All you haters get up out my way, cause I'm about to wake. All you haters up, hop on it, let's just ride the wave. You should really listen to this song, cause it's about you slaves. If you want your freedom, stop acting naive. Man, I'm talking naive, hate it like a dry heat. Cause everything you need is hell right in. Man, I'm never right thing when I hit this machine. Swear I got it from my dad, how I got the gift of gab. Articulate, matriculate through 50 states. I'm just here to twist your fate, set it straight. I'm so great, gotta set a date, call me meditate. I'm so metaphysical, I'm the god, call me metafate. They told me not to do it, so I had to do it. I'm tired of all these people trying to be so fancy. You say a lot of stuff, but you don't mean nothing. So tell me how the hell you're supposed to make advances. Advances, make advances, make advances. Advances, make advances, make advances. Advances, make advances, make advances. Advances, till a brother got it. They don't say nothing till a brother got it. I'ma pull up with the Corvette, cause I'm so fat. Yeah, you know I gotta give him a check. Yeah, I'm so chest with the popped out like, yeah, that's me. All day, can't you see? That's me. All day, Super Saiyan like I'm Goku when I'm flying through the atmosphere. I'm about to clear everybody out of here, can't you see? I'm just killing all these rats with these raps clear. Can't you see? Can't you see how I'm right here? Told me not to do it, so I had to do it. I'm tired of all these people trying to be so fancy. You say a lot of stuff, but you don't mean nothing. So tell me how the hell you're supposed to make advances. Make advances, make advances, make advances. Make advances, make advances, make advances. Make advances, make advances, make advances. Make advances. They told me not to do it, so I had to do it. I'm tired of all these people trying to be so fancy. You say a lot of stuff, but you don't mean nothing. So tell me how the hell you're supposed to make advances.